Greetings once again to you, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Glad to have you with us for another week here at the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the news of the week and focus it through the lens of original thought. I am back from my road trip out to Las Vegas. I want to thank Mike and Chris and Nate and all of our personhood contacts out there in Las Vegas who made my stay as pleasant as it possibly could have been. Listen, I spent the first 8 hours at Denver International Airport. It was a travel nightmare. I should have known things were headed in the wrong direction. I got on the escalator to go up to the concourse, and the woman on the escalator in front of me, she flung her rather overstuffed purse up over her shoulder. The strap broke. It fell down onto the escalator, and all the contents of it poured out there, or a good bit of the contents, poured out right onto the escalator. And I looked up at the woman, and our eyes met for a moment, and we realized we've got about 8 seconds. And we're playing beat the clock on the escalator. I'm grabbing lipstick and sunglasses, a cell phone, an iPod, some chewing gum. And by the time we got to the top, we almost got it all except for one pen that stayed on the escalator. But the guy behind me managed to kick it off the escalator before it was consumed and crunched down in the escalator. And I began to hand the woman all of her stuff. And here's your iPod, here's your cell phone, sunglasses, comb. And she said, you go ahead and keep the gum. And so I looked at it. It was a piece of Trident gum, small, wrapped in paper. And I inspected it. And it was a little dusty, but there were no breaks in the paper. And so I chewed the gum. Anyway, I've been sick ever since. But I shouldn't. And then... The catching the flight was like a drug addict chasing that next hit, because they kept moving the flight 45 minutes at a time. And then at one point they put us on a plane, and the pilot said he didn't like the oil consumption on the way to Denver. We're going to have to get off the plane. He's going to find us some new equipment, for which I thanked him. But needless to say, I did not I departed. I arrived at the airport at 2 o'clock. I departed at 10:05 in the evening. And anyway, my health was not at its peak during the entire trip. I don't know if it was the gum or if it was hearing that story about the blanket on Bob Enyart's bed in jail. Anyway, Bob and Ken are back. They're out of jail. We're glad to have them back. They were at church this morning. We all got a chance to go to church this morning, so I feel completely energized for the week ahead. And speaking of Bob and Ken and their publicly funded jailhouse ministry, that takes us to the International File, where we will begin the program in Taipei. That's in Taiwan. There's a large city in Taiwan there for all of you public educators and publicly educated people out there. Dateline Taipei from the Reuters Wire. A jobless Taiwan man released from prison stole a box of cotton swabs just to get arrested again because he, quote, simply could not forget the police department boxed lunches. Yes. The homeless man first stole a pair of shoes this past Sunday. He was detained and released, and apparently he was fed at some point in there. He liked the boxed lunch so much that he resorted to stealing again the next day, according to Reuters, just to get back inside jail and to get fed again. So, I asked Bob and Ken about the food there at the El Paso County Jail. It wasn't that great, but, and then they're not about to go out and steal a box of Q-tips in order to go back just for the food. But just to give you some idea, you know, jail's not the worst place in the world to be. Especially if you were a heathen and you happened to run into Bob and Ken while they were in there doing their publicly funded jailhouse ministry. And we're glad they had that opportunity, but we're glad to have them back. All you folks, you can check out at KGOV.com to get all the details on their rather fortunate incarceration. All right, now update. This was hot off the wire last night. Larry Flint was rushed to a Los Angeles area hospital. on Saturday afternoon, but I checked the wires this morning. Unfortunately, he has recovered. He's back at home now, celebrating Father's Day. However, Larry Flint celebrates Father's Day. I'm sure there's a chicken involved. Now, according to the story from RadarOnline.com, Flint has been married 5 times and is the father of 5 children. I did not know that. So if there's one good thing you can say about Larry Flint, who's done more than just about anyone to contribute to the destruction of the American family and Western civilization in general, at least he doesn't appear to be a homosexual. At least that's something you could say good about Larry Flint. My mom always taught me to try to say something good about everyone. And there you have Larry Flint. 5 kids, for crying out loud. All right. Now, we'll dive right back in. Okay, here we go with this one. Listen to this. Dateline, New York City, from the Associated Press. The granddaughter of Cuban revolutionary leader Che Guevara is at the forefront of another revolution, vegetarianism. That's right. Lydia Guevara posed semi-clothed in a PETA campaign that tells viewers to join the vegetarian revolution. That's right. Yeah, there's an ad campaign that is going to be launched down in Argentina, and that's where Che Guevara was from there. And his daughter is appearing semi-clothed in the she's a 24-year-old empty-headed vegetarian, and she is going to be appearing in this Join the Vegetarian Revolution ad campaign. You'll remember Che Guevara was a Marxist leader who played a pivotal role in Fidel Castro's rise to power there in Cuba. He was executed in Bolivia in 1967, probably by Fidel Castro, the very fellow he helped to get into power. Now, there's a quote in here from a PETA spokesman. Oh, they actually call him a spokesman. It's not very politically correct of PETA. His name's Michael McGraw. He says, "We say the best way to save animals is not to eat them." And I would say to Michael, "Michael, what do you mean the best way to save animals is not to eat them? If we don't eat them, so many would never even be born. They'd never even be produced. Their lives would never be lived. Surely you would agree with me that if you're an animal, it's better to have lived and been eaten than never to have lived at all. Wouldn't you agree?" Maybe he wouldn't agree because he's a PETA spokesman. Something like that. Let's see. Mr. McGraw, the spokesman for PETA, advised the Associated Press reporter that there were a number of other famous high-profile people who have promoted vegetarianism for PETA, including Paul McCartney and Forrest Whitaker, who both apparently appeared, thankfully, fully clothed. Now, in response to my assertion on last week's broadcast that Michelle Obama is one of the biggest fashion nightmares to have ever occurred in the public eye, from the Associated Press in New York City, the Council of Fashion Designers of America's Special Tribute Award went this past week to the First Lady, M.O., Michelle Obama, and apparently she is considered a new player in the fashion world. It took host Tracy Ullman less than 2 minutes in her opening monologue to mention the new First Lady of fashion. And if that's not proof that the entire artistic world is on massive amounts of mind-altering drugs, there simply is no proof. Because Michelle Obama, all right, I'm not going to beat a dead horse, okay? We will just watch over the coming weeks and months, and it's my prediction that by the end of Barry Ho's first disastrous Jimmy Carter-like term, Lord willing, Michelle Obama will be a laughingstock for her horrible choices in fashion. That's my bold prediction for the week. All right, now, so bad news on the fashion front, but here we go. A story that will, just a good old-fashioned news story, okay, that'll hearten everyone out there in the audience. Dateline, Doddridge, Arkansas, from the AP. When a 7-year-old boy fell into an abandoned water well in southwest Arkansas, cowboy Reed Nations lassoed him. He lassoed the boy, young Jonathan Easter, out of the well with a lariat. That's right. It happened this past Tuesday morning. Jonathan was helping his aunt clear brush around an old house near Doddridge. and he fell 20 to 30 feet down the well, which has sand walls. And this cowboy named Reed Nations, he came sauntering by, probably on a pale horse, and he was working on a nearby ranch, and he used a rope lariat to pull young Jonathan to safety. And young Jonathan escaped with just a cut on his arm. And a cowboy, Reed Nations, says that he doesn't want any notoriety. He hasn't given any interviews. He hasn't signed an agreement for a reality show, and he hasn't released a book. And firefighters have covered the well. Just a good old-fashioned news story. Now, what do you think the odds are that cowboy Reed Nations, Lariat Hero, is a member of either PETA or a subscriber to any of Larry Flint's publications, or wants to marry his boyfriend? I would say there's no chance on any of those counts. Reed Nations is a true American, and he doesn't want to be covered anymore, so we'll just let that story ride off into the sunset, and we'll thank cowboy Reed Nations for just brightening this week for us. So good news on the cowboy front. There still are cowboys in America. There still are real men in America. But there are also a lot of lawyers. Dateline Jeffersonville, Indiana, from the Culture File. An Indiana lawyer was found asleep headfirst in a neighbor's trash can after a night of drinking. He has apologized and says he is embarrassed. Lawyer Larry Wilder is the Jeffersonville City Council's attorney. Now, he said that he had dinner and drinks with friends out in Louisville on Tuesday night. He said he was driven home in a client's limousine, but remembers little that happened after that. A neighbor found Wilder in the trash can headfirst early Wednesday and called police, who helped lawyer Larry Wilder to go home. Apparently no charges have been filed, as Mr. Wilder doesn't appear to have injured anyone except himself and his pride, his profession. And, well, he's embarrassed his creator. He'll have to square that up on his own. But it's my contention that this poor slob is a victim of MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Yes, he's a victim. Like so many Americans, especially lawyers, he is a victim. And why do I say that about Mothers Against Drunk Driving? Aren't they considered one of the most wonderful and humanitarian organizations to have come along in the past 30 years? Well, you might think so. But let me warn you, ladies and gentlemen, if as an organization, you, as Mothers Against Drunk Driving, you teach young, relatively financially successful young men that they can go out and get drunk as long as they have a designated driver, which this fellow did, he was driven home in a limousine. If you teach them that they can go get drunk because they have a designated driver, many of them will end up head first in a lot of filthy, dangerous piles of life's refuse. The least of which is a pile of garbage. But that is pretty embarrassing, Dan. As a lawyer, Larry Wilder Esquire head first in a pile of garbage. Well, hopefully Larry quits the firm at some point. Speaking of lawyers, Dateline New Boston, Texas, a judge has declared a mistrial in a murder case after one of the defense attorneys was arrested on his way to court on suspicion of driving while intoxicated. Now, the lawyer claims that he was not under the influence of any alcohol or illegal drugs. He says he lost control of his car during a sneezing fit brought on by allergies and a black pepper sprinkled catfish that he had just eaten. And out in New Boston, Texas, apparently, pepper-sprinkled catfish is as likely a story as a lawyer drinking before lunchtime. And so they're going to be looking into that. Anyway, just feel glad that you didn't go to law school, because you may have embarrassed your mother at some point in your life, but not as bad as these guys. All right, now this story is another one just to brighten your week. Dateline Muskogee, Oklahoma. A 23-year-old woman who got a friend to kill her Jack Russell Terrier was charged with skinning the puppy to make a belt out of its hide. Yes, she was skinning the puppy to make a belt out of its hide. That's what I said. Crystal Lynn Lewis and Austin Michael Mullins, 26-year-old Generation Y members, were being held Friday in the Muskogee County Jail on $25,000 bail each. They were charged with one felony count of cruelty to animals. Okay, All right. You want to know more? Muskogee County judge has ordered a mental competence hearing for Ms. Lewis. Lewis wanted the puppy named Poplin killed because it was a gift from a female ex-lover with whom she does... Oh, get along, man. Okay. You know, I was trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. You want to give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, I mean, right? I mean, at least until you see the belt. You know? But it turns out that she's a deranged homosexual. And that's just sad. Let's see here. Robertson and Mullins... That's Crystal Lynn and Austin. They shot the terrier 10 times with a .22 caliber pistol. Lewis then skinned the animal at her apartment and nailed the hide to a board. Now, I believe that nailing the hide to the board, I think that is the correct method, so I don't really see a problem with that. Having to shoot the... Now, a Jack Russell Terrier's not that big of a dog. I'm not sure why you would have to shoot the dog 10 times with a .22 caliber pistol. Maybe they just weren't very good shots. A lot of the younger people these days, they've never really been taught to shoot. Anyway, I was withholding judgment until I saw the belt. But, obviously, we're dealing with mental illness here. Because, and again, a female ex-lover is involved, and it's just all very distasteful. That's unfortunate. Because, what's that?
What's this story?
Well, I thought it might be a good-looking belt. I mean, a Jack Russell Terrier is good. I'm saying that there's fashion potential there, but I didn't realize that the person was deranged.
Michelle Obama.
Oh, is that says there's something Michelle Obama might be seen wearing? Well, we'll just see about that. Okay, now finally, to end the first segment here, Dateline Methuen, Massachusetts. A Massachusetts man is facing animal cruelty charges for allegedly killing his bulldog with a hammer. Now, he has told police that the dog was sick and he couldn't afford to pay a veterinarian. He didn't want to burden a shelter with the animal. Mr. Charles Berube, he appeared in court last week. A jury trial is scheduled. A jury trial? Apparently, he's been charged with... cruelty to animals. Well, he hasn't been charged with murder. We haven't gone that far yet. Now, Berube says he owned the dog named Spot for 10 years. So, I mean, you own a dog for 10 years, and, you know, the dog gets sick, and you're dead broke. And anyway, had he recently met a guy? Is there a possibility that he had recently met a guy? I mean, according to the last story, that seems to lead to issues with dogs and other animals. I guess we'll have to look into that as the trial proceeds. Berube, he says, yeah, he didn't want the animal to suffer, and he killed it with a hammer. Now, I would have to see the particular technique that he used before I pass judgment on whether or not he was being cruel to the dog. Not that I would have a trial over it, certainly, but we'll certainly want to look into whether or not he had recently had an ugly breakup with a boyfriend. All right, I'm in agreement that the last couple of stories didn't necessarily brighten up anybody's week. They turned out to be relatively distasteful. But I will try to redeem myself in this segment. We have much more serious news in this segment, ladies and gentlemen. And so we will just dive right into the domestic tranquility file from CBS. A 26-year-old convenience store clerk was shot and killed in broad daylight in Gary, Indiana. And police say witnesses stood by and did nothing. They say there were several customers walking around the store after the crime, but only one called 911 for help. People apparently went in and out of the store, walking past the lifeless body of the store clerk on the ground, and they didn't stop to call the police or check if he was okay. Apparently, the surveillance tape is quite disturbing. And at a news conference on this Wednesday past, community organizers demanded Gary police offer a reward for information about the case. They say the people of Gary need financial incentive to come forward. Investigators said no reward was planned. So, well, the folks in Gary, Indiana, certainly Reed Nations, our cowboy lariat hero, out in Doddridge, Arkansas. Apparently he wasn't in the store because he would have stopped to help the gentleman. He would have done the Samaritan thing. He would have stopped and helped him. But anyway, the folks in Gary, Indiana, community organizers there say they need a financial financial incentive to come forward. And that's the result of too many community organizers in Gary, Indiana, in my humble opinion. Anyway, I would probably, if I had to live in either place, I would take Doddridge, Arkansas over Gary, Indiana any day. And more from the Domestic Tranquility File. Dateline, El Dorado Hills, California, Tyler Witt and Stephen Cover, a 14-year-old girl and her 19-year-old boyfriend, were arrested this Wednesday past in the murder of the girl's mother, who was stabbed in her home. Authorities suspect the daughter's relationship with the 19-year-old young man may have led to the murder. Investigators are trying to figure out which of the suspects allegedly committed the murder or if both participated. Chief Assistant District Attorney Bill Clark was not aware if the two had retained attorneys. Now, they have this line in almost every story regarding someone who's been arrested. You know, whether or not they've retained an attorney, as if I could care less if they had an attorney. I think most of the people in journalism, they flunked out of law school, and so they somehow, they have this thing for attorneys. It's just weird. I think I've got a story later where I'm going to get into the use of language by former journalism students, which are former law students who flunked out of law school, apparently. We're going to get into their use of language and how it muddies the waters in how the average American perceives the news of the day. But back to this particularly disturbing story. 14-year-old girl, 19-year-old boyfriend apparently have participated in the murder of her mother. Authorities had been called to the home of the girl before. Apparently the young lady was booked into juvenile hall just on May 18th of this year for assaulting her mother at the home. And so that's Domestic Tranquility in El Dorado Hills, California for you. I've got an update on a story that we did a few weeks ago. From Tampa, Florida, prosecutors will seek the death penalty for a man accused of throwing his ex-girlfriend's baby out of a car on a Florida highway, killing the infant. You'll remember Richard McTeer Jr., who we learned is not the child's father, the child who was murdered. He has pleaded not guilty to first-degree murder and other charges, and they will seek the death penalty. So this is a case that we will keep track of and we will follow until it is moved into the justice file, because as you know, I have volunteered the use of myself and my vehicle to heave one Richard McTeer from that vehicle at approximately 75 miles an hour on a freeway if and when he is duly convicted of the crime, and I really want to do that. It would really make my day to throw Mr. McTeer out of a moving vehicle. So we'll see how that story ends. We'll see if it ends up in the justice file. And we certainly hope that it does. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. Dateline, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Police say 24-year-old Roger Hamilton told me he was sitting on a bus station bench on Wednesday about to put mayonnaise on his bologna sandwich when another man began staring at him. The man then punched him in the mouth, grabbed his sandwich, and left. Police said Hamilton has a swollen lip and his face was covered with blood, lending credibility to his story. The police report listed the value of the sandwich at 76 cents. Police have not yet found the attacker, at least at last report. So that's the state of domestic tranquility in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Anyway, I don't think you want to show anything valued at over about 6 cents at a bus stop station bench anywhere in the country, okay? Because you're taking your life into your own hands, and that's just the sad state of affairs here in the United States of America, circa 2009, especially there in Oklahoma City. Just a sad story. Now, this is even worse. Now, this is going to make you cringe, but I'm going to do it. I couldn't decide whether to put this in the culture file or the domestic tranquility file. It's just a horrible story. A Queens, New York mother, this is from the New York Daily News, performed a bizarre voodoo ritual that left her six-year-old girl scarred for life. Young Francia Santil was engulfed in flames during the voodoo fire ritual, while Mother Marie Loredine let the screaming girl burn. Eventually, Francia's grandmother doused the flames with cold water, but the women then put the girl to bed instead of getting her help or calling 911. Francia suffered for a whole day before a relative begged the two women to take the young girl to the hospital. When doctors finally saw her, Francia had second and third degree burns covering 25% of her body, including her face, torso, and legs. Laura Dean, who is a 29-year-old Haitian immigrant, was charged with assault and endangering the welfare of a child. She faces up to 25 years. Endangering the welfare of a child, isn't that a bit of an understatement? I mean, endangering the, you know, feeding your kid sugar all day is endangering the welfare of a child, but setting your child on fire seems to me to be attempted murder. It's somewhat beyond endangering the welfare of a child. That's all I'm saying. Let's see. The voodoo grandma, Sylvanie Thessier, a 70-year-old voodoo grandma who should know better, for crying out loud. She's 70 years old. She's been charged with reckless endangerment and endangering the welfare of the child. Faces up to 7 years. That's very creative. Let's just finish. A friend, nicknamed Sketch, helped the women stage the February 4th ritual, but was not named or charged with a crime. I guess because all they had to go on was Sketch, and she disappeared in a voodoo fog. I tell you, bad religion is dangerous. Laura Dean and her mother and the daughter lived in a basement of a two-family home in Queens Village, where neighbors say they were not surprised. Now, that tells you the state of that neighborhood. When a young child is set on fire, and reporters interview the neighbors, and they say, well, we weren't surprised. That's a bad neighborhood. Neighbor Henry St. John said, they weren't too conversational. I used to hear them scream at Franzia. They would tell her to get on her knees for a couple of hours. Laura Dean allegedly burned her daughter while performing a ritual that Brown called Loa. She sprayed a circle of rum on the floor around her daughter, poured some on her head, and ignited it. Yeah, that's your voodoo ritual. Man.
What was she trying to do?
Yeah, we're not sure what the point of the ritual. But I want to ask the neighbors, I mean, come on. I mean, please. If you hear them torturing the child, making her get on her knees for a few hours, I mean, couldn't somebody do something? Hasn't anyone ever read the... There's a line in the Bible, love thy neighbor as thyself. In fact, I was looking it up earlier. It appears in 9 different passages in both the Old and New Testament. Love thy neighbor as thyself, but apparently not in Queens Village in New York. Just a tragic story. Anyway, I knew I didn't like voodoo. Now, that story may... like I said, that'll make you cringe. Well, here's one. Dateline, where is this from? Well, it's Canada, the best I can tell, because it's from the CBC. And this will take the edge off that last story. In an attack this Tuesday past, a cougar pounced on a toddler named Maya Espinosa from behind as she and her mother were walking their dog and picking berries in the park near the Squamish River. Mother Maureen Lee told CBC News, all of a sudden the cougar just flew on my daughter. It rolled her a couple of times and grabbed her under its belly on the ground, like in the fetal position. Maya was on her back and he had his paws on her head, and I just knew I had to react quick, so I jumped in there and wedged myself between the cougar and my girl on the ground. Then I got up and threw the cougar off my back and grabbed her and booked it. The toddler suffered puncture wounds to her left arm and head, but is recovering just fine, according to her brave mother. Pablo Espinoza, Maya's father. Hey, look at that. A news story that actually mentions somebody's father. That's appropriate here on Father's Day as we head into Father's Week. We advocate that, by the way, the celebration of Father's Week. Rather than just Father's Day, we do that for Mother's Week as well. But as we head into Father's Week, it's bizarre to see the CBC mention someone's father in a news story. It caught me off guard. Anyway, Pablo Espinoza, Maya's father, told CBC News his daughter thought the cat was playing. She was eager to return to kindergarten to tell her classmates what had happened. Anyway, that's miles away from Queens Village, New York, is it not? Now, we're going to delve into the, I guess this is the government file, the politics file, I don't know. Dateline Los Angeles, California. Los Angeles County supervisors, also known as student council members, voted Tuesday to push for changes to CalWORKs, which is the California alleged work welfare to work program. They've decided to push for changes and to CalWORKs and other government aid programs that they say would save nearly $300 million. Included in their suggestions is a novel proposal to put unemployed parents to work caring for their own children. Yes, you heard me right. The ultimate welfare to work program. If you're on welfare and you're collecting a check, from now on, we're going to expect you to take care of your own children. Now, the reason unemployed parents in California receive welfare checks and also receive other monies for their children is so twisted and demented that I'm not even going to go into it. It's just a bizarre series of bureaucratic enactments over the past 40 years that, with unintended consequences everywhere, that has led to parents collecting three or four different checks from three or four different California and Los Angeles County welfare offices. So that some genius bureaucrat has said, look, we'll just combine these two things. They won't get the one check. And we'll actually, we can't give them a check unless they're working or unless they're training to work. So we'll just call parenting work and we'll save all this money. Anyway, some parents who would be affected by the change had mixed feelings. They had mixed feelings. That's because they're on welfare. They're collecting government checks. They're on the dole. They're pathetic losers dragging Western civilization down toward the vortex, that sucking sound that leads straight to hell. How can you have mixed feelings about taking care of your own kid? It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Let that guitar go. Sounds like a Les Paul. Yeah, definitely a Les Paul. All right, now we're back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to dive now into the politics file. As we move on from Los Angeles County, who is going to... I can't tell if they're going to pay people to take care of their kids or if they're going to cut their welfare check to take care of their kids. Either way, I don't see that ending well out there in beautiful Los Angeles County. God's country, for sure. But not by his choice. From Barry Ho, Dateline Washington, from the Associated Press, President Barack Obama says the biblical command to, quote, love thy neighbor as thyself, unquote, is as pertinent now as ever. The president said on Friday that an entire community suffers when some members cannot pay their mortgages or find jobs. He called on Americans to work together to build a better future for everyone, including immigrants. Obama made his remarks at the Esperanza Nacional Hispanic Prayer Breakfast and Conferencinia in Washington, D.C. So, Mr. Obama has taken upon himself to quote the Bible. Now, whenever one of these heathen politicians quotes the Bible, it always makes me want to do a little bit of research as to what exactly they quoted and what are their particular motivations. Now, we know that Barry Ho and M.O. and everyone else there involved in the Obama administration is preparing the way for socialized medicine. We've been reading the papers. We know that he's already presided over some of the most dramatic instances of what I call neo-Nimrod policies. Yeah, neo-Nimrod policies. You remember Nimrod, right? Nimrod was the guy who set up the first global government that was going to take care of everyone's needs, and they decided to build a tower. I've always been interested in that whole story as to what the tower represented. Is it a metaphor? Was it literal? Anyway, we know the story. Basically, Nimrod convinced people that the government could replace God in their lives. And he apparently got the whole world to go along with him until for some reason their language was confused and they ended up, you know, hating each other, running from each other, hiding from each other, and then eventually going to war with each other for approximately 4,000 straight years. So, yeah, so you've heard of the neo-Nazis, the neocons. These are the neo-Nimrodians. Yeah, and they're more dangerous than any of the aforementioned neos. They're very dangerous. And so, right, we have a Bible verse. So, warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone to ever quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered, and I want you to pay attention to the unadulterated part. Now, this love thy neighbor as thyself, as quoted by one Barry Ho, as I said, it appears 9 times in the Holy Scriptures in both the Old and New Testament. The most popular rendering is Matthew 22 and verse 39. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, your mind, and strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. So now Barry left off the first part of that quote. Now, if you go through all 9 instances in the Holy Scriptures of love thy neighbor as thyself, each one of them is in reference to the law, what is the greatest commandment. And it always starts with, there's one commandment, love the Lord your God. Put him first. And secondly, love your neighbor as yourself. And Barry Ho has conveniently left out the first part about honoring God first, because he's a neo-Nimrodian and he wants you to honor him first and his administration first. Second, honor the fashion choices of M.O. above almost all other things. And thirdly, love thy neighbor as thyself. Anyway, it always bothers me when they quote Scripture, because you know that he really doesn't understand the context of the Scripture. And you know that he knows that 93.8% of the audience that he's addressing doesn't understand the context of that Scripture. And so he's using Scripture to take advantage of stupid people and to institute neo-Nimrodian policies. And for that, there will be a specially hot corner of hell awaiting Barry Ho, unless he repents and gets his act together. Now, speaking of disgusting, foul, vile, hypocritical, heathen, neo-Nimrodian leaders, Dateline, Washington, D.C., from the Associated Press, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton fractured her right elbow during a fall this past week. That's right. On her way to the White House, she fell and injured her elbow. A funny thing happened on my way to the White House. First, I lost an election to a black guy named Barack. And then I broke my arm. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of ironic. She apparently, it's a fracture. It's a fracture indeed. She fell, allegedly, and injured her elbow. We don't know the whole story. You never know the whole story with Hillary, for crying out loud. Let's see. Hillary had been scheduled to join actress Angelina Jolie on a Thursday morning television show. Yeah. Yeah. Now, she said, now that was scratched from her schedule. She says she's now met with a medical team. She thanked the medical team who treated her. She looks forward to resuming her full schedule, working to corrupt all that is good and righteous about America. Now, I made up that last part, but you know that's true. So I'm hoping you'll grant me just a little bit of editorial and poetic license there. So she was going to meet with Angelina Jolie, huh? I wonder if Bill was going to be there, think? Man, he's got to be mad. Now let's move into the war file. And this is wars that are and wars that are to come. Dateline Seoul, South Korea. North Korea may fire a long-range ballistic missile toward Hawaii. The missile launch could come between July 4th and July 8th, according to the Yomiuri Daily newspaper there in the mainland of Japan. President Barry Ho, Barack Obama, and South Korean President Lee Myung-bak met in Washington this past week for a landmark summit in which they agreed to build a regional and global strategic alliance to persuade North Korea to dismantle all its nuclear weapons. Okay. Anyway, that just strikes me as funny. They're going to persuade. Anyway, Obama declared North Korea is a grave threat to the world, and he pledged that the new unsanctions on the communist regime will be aggressively enforced. So the unsanctions, by the way, that's, you know, the UN acted and said that they were going to sanction North Korea and that we would have, that the civilized world would have the right to track, observe, and prevent North Korean ships from proliferating nuclear materials around the globe. And apparently we've got a boat that we're tracking, and we'll just see. We'll just see how the UN and Barry Ho, we'll just see how sharp their methods of persuasion are with the folks there, the insane folks who are enslaving North Korea. And, you know, one certain way to escape from an economic depression such as the one that we find ourselves in at this moment is a war. A major conflict will certainly do a lot to end the economic doldrums, or it will at least take the minds of the public off of the economic recession, depression, whatever you want to call it. And there are several wars that could be declared and fought gallantly and valiantly by the American military at any given time, because there are despots and tyrants in power, such as Kim Jong-il in North Korea. And does Barry Ho have the nerve to do the right thing? I don't think that he has the intent to do the right thing. But he is a guy who gets things done. And we will just have to see what he does with this boat if they decide to board this boat. I'm a little disturbed that the story leaked that we're tracking this boat. And maybe I'm ignorant, but it's not the kind of thing I necessarily would want my enemy knowing about until after it was done. Until we had boarded the boat, found out what was on it, either taken it into custody or, you know, slapped their wrist and told them go ahead with, you know, maybe it turns out all they had on the boat was coffee. I personally wouldn't want my enemy to know I had those capabilities until after I had used them. And then, you know, after he wets his pants reading the story, that's when I want him to know that I can track your boats and I can board your ships at any given moment, anytime I want to. But, you know, I guess Barry Ho knows what he's doing. I don't know that he knows what he's doing. But anyway, the story also talks about North Korea's massive stockpile of chemical weapons. Where have we heard that before? Yeah, the Japanese newspaper reports that the Koreans have a massive stockpile of chemical weapons, which may or may not be true, but does it really matter? He's enslaving, brutalizing, starving, and killing hundreds of thousands of people every month. Do we really need the stockpile of chemical weapons? I mean, let's go back to Saddam Hussein. Based on just what he did to the soccer team, we had the right to invade and execute that that guy. Just on the soccer team. Forget the chemical weapons. Anyway, there's no need to embellish the threat of North Korea. But the Japanese, they're genuinely terrified. And and what's sad is they're counting on us to help. We'll see what happens. That will be an interesting story to watch. Now back into the international file, Dateline Freetown, Sierra Leone. Snake charmers in Freetown have failed to remove 400 cobras and vipers that overran a police station there. However, The authorities in the southern district of Bo, there in Sierra Leone, have now called in police, army, and firefighters after the snakes scared away police officers and residents who were at the police station to report crimes. The police station was taken over by snakes. Do you get that? Can you picture that in your mind? An entire building full of people. People are fleeing and running in terror and fear. Why? Because the building is full of snakes. Anyway, according to the head of the police station there, he says, "We have forced water into the building, and some of the snakes trying to escape were shot by our men carrying AK-47s. I mean, this is like one of those... you might be a redneck jokes. It's like, you might live in a third world country if your local police station is overtaken by cobras and vipers, and you have to flush the building with water and then shoot the snakes as they escape. Anyway, the police commissioner there, he says, hopefully the combined force of the water and the AK-47s will be able to free the building from the snakes by sometime next week. So they've got a lot of work cut out for themselves there. In Sierra Leone. Now, if you're a superstitious type, or if, you know, one of those voodoo types, you'd be wondering what was going on in that police station that all those snakes and cobras and vipers had to take it over. But we know the truth. We know that it's just because it's a poor, pathetic third world country governed by horrible government and bad religion. I started a joke which started the whole world crying. Oh, but I didn't see that the joke was on me. Oh no. And I started to cry, which started the whole world laughing. Oh, if I'd only see that the joke was on me. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And we're going to move forward out of Sierra Leone and the snakes and all of that into the politics file, where there's plenty of snakes, don't get me wrong. Let's see, we've got a story that mentions George W. Bush, which just doesn't happen very often. So for the sheer novelty of it, we'll mention this story. From the Washington Times, Dateline Erie, Pennsylvania, former President W. fired a salvo at President Obama this past week, asserting his administration's interrogation policies were within the law, declaring the private sector, not the government, will fix the economy, and rejecting the nationalization of health care. Yeah, not a word did W. have to say about the expansion of the legalized killing of children that the current administration has presided over, the further erosion of our shared Christian heritage that the current pack of heathen scum who are not only in the White House but throughout the government, that they're perpetrating on America. W doesn't say a thing about any of that. So W, just sit down and shut up. I mean, go back to Texas and fix your barbed wire fences or whatever it is you're doing. Probably the stupidest man to ever occupy the White House, George W. Bush. Perhaps the least qualified, stupidest, densest, dumbest person to have ever been the President of the United States. And I didn't vote for him twice. And speaking of the further erosion of our shared Christian heritage, President Barack Obama this past week extended benefits to same-sex partners of federal employees. Yes, several powerful gay fundraisers had withdrawn their support from a Democratic National Committee event where President Joe Biden was speaking, and Barry Ho got the message, and he started doling out the federal dollars to the queers and their boyfriends and girlfriends and transgendered and ambiguously gendered housemates, or however you want to put it. I apologize if I left anyone out. San Francisco, California, from the politics file, The U.S. Census Bureau official, U.S. Census Bureau officials said this Friday past that married same-sex couples will be counted as such in the 2010 national tally, reversing an earlier decision made under the Bush administration. But does Bush have anything to say about any of that? No, because he's a moron. Barack Obama and his minions and the Senate and the House are working as fast as they can to destroy as much of the fabric of our nation as they possibly can. They're in cahoots with the fags, frankly, and the queers, and the deviants, and the derelicts, and the lazy, and the bums, and the socialists, and the communists, and the lawyers. A spokesman for the Census Bureau said regarding same-sex couples, which is a very politically correct way to say deviants who bugger one another, to put an English point on it there. About these deviants, they will be counted, and they ought to report the way they see themselves. In the normal process of reports coming out after the census of 2010, I think the country will have a good data set on which to discuss this phenomenon that is evolving in this country. Well, you know, if you people in the government weren't doing everything you could to crack a champagne bottle every time someone comes out of the closet, maybe it wouldn't be an evolving phenomenon. Maybe there wouldn't be queers pouring out of every door, whether it's a closet or not. I mean, they're everywhere, for crying out loud.
It's like Zoe. American flag.
Oh, yeah, right.
American flag.
My daughter this morning, she was noticing American fags everywhere. She has a little problem with her pronunciation. And now we're driving down the freeway, the elevated portion of the freeway, past downtown Denver, and there were a number of American fags. There was a fag on the left, a fag on the right, a fag up ahead. Anyway, we realized that she was referring to American flags. Stars and bars, red, white, and blue, and all that. But these days, driving through Denver, I mean, she might have just been spotting those fags everywhere along the freeway. Anyway, it was quite disturbing. But we had a good chuckle on the way to church this morning. Let's see, anything more on the census and the homosexuals? No. We'll just move on from that. Okay, now, speaking of deviant homosexuals in the news, a story from WorldNet Daily, Barney Frank wants to legalize marijuana and has introduced legislation that would accomplish just this goal. So Barney Frank has never been one to discriminate or to advise anyone on what they put in their mouth. Whether it's a joint or although he does hate tobacco, from what I understand. I think that's where he draws the line. Now, Barney Frank wants to legalize marijuana, according to WorldNet Daily. And he even gave a speech as he introduced legislation. Now, let's see. One of the proposals he introduced would remove federal penalties for using marijuana. And the second proposal would let people in states where medical marijuana is allowed use it freely. So all of the conservatives who said, look, they're trying to pass these medical marijuana bills just as a stepping stone to legalizing marijuana. Well, here it is right here. One of the proposals says if you're in a state where medical marijuana is legal, we should just decriminalize marijuana. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's what Barney Frank. And he gave a speech. Do we have tape from the speech? Do we have tape? Okay, we're going to run actual tape from Barney Frank's legislative introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, criminalizing choices that adults make because we think they are unwise ones, when the choices involved have no negative effect on the rights of others, is not appropriate in a free society. To those who say that the government should not be encouraging the smoking of marijuana, my response is, I completely agree. But it is a great mistake to divide all human activity into two categories, those that are criminally prohibited and those that are encouraged. So Mr. Frank apparently thinks that decriminalizing marijuana would in no way encourage the use of marijuana, proving that Mr. Frank has smoked too much marijuana, frankly. According to the Marijuana Policy Project, this proposal from Mr. Frank represents a major step towards sanity in federal marijuana policy. Mr. Frank also, he says it should be a state issue. Should be a state issue. When doctors recommend the use of marijuana for their patients and states are willing to permit it, I think it's wrong for the federal government to subject either the doctors or the patients to criminal prosecution. More broadly speaking, and I am one who quite speaks broadly very often, the norm in America is for states to decide whether particular behaviors should be made criminal. To make the smoking of marijuana, whether for medical purposes or not, one of those extremely rare instances of a federal crime, literally to make a federal case out of it, is wholly disproportionate to the activity involved. After all, homosexuality has basically been decriminalized, and that's far more disgusting and dangerous than smoking marijuana. I made up that last part. Anyway, I agree with Mr. Frank that it should be a state issue. You know, people getting stoned and getting drunk and losing control of their senses should be enforced at the state level, but let's face the facts. Many states and localities have basically stopped enforcing the laws against marijuana due to localized cultural pressure put on them by potheads, artists, musicians, and fags who want to smoke their dope. So the local cops, they just don't enforce the law anymore, so it falls on the government. I mean, what if in one particular state, because of localized cultural pressure, the police stopped enforcing the law against killing black people because they're black? Should the government just sit back and say, well, it's a state's rights issue? No, the government has to come in and enforce the law when local people prevent... let's see here. We've got a spokesperson for the Marijuana Policy Project. And what did he have to say? His name is Aaron Houston. And here's what he had to say.
Our decades-long war on marijuana has given us the worst of all possible worlds. A drug that's widely used and universally available, but produced and sold entirely by unregulated criminals who obey no rules and pay no taxes. This is just insanity.
Let's see here. Now I'm coughing. All right. Anyway, I don't want to do any more of that. Is there something I can close with here that's... All right, we'll do this. All right. Dateline, from the international file, Dateline Jalalabad, Afghanistan. Taliban fighters beat musicians, shaved their heads, and left them tied to trees overnight because they performed at an Afghan wedding. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I did not hear the music that these particular musicians performed, and typically I would want to do that before I render judgment on a story like this. But this is the Taliban, after all. And so I don't think that it had anything to do with the quality of the performance of the musicians in question. Let's read along in the story. Taliban fighters shaved the heads of the musicians and made them take oaths in the presence of villagers that they would not sing or play music at weddings again. Afghan weddings and engagement parties in rural areas are traditionally celebrated with hundreds of guests, music, and singing that often continues late into the night. And ladies and gentlemen, in Afghanistan, these are not gay weddings. These are heterosexual weddings, and people party well into the night, and I'm all for that. And I'm all for finishing off the Taliban. Seems like that's been going on for too darn long. All right, that's the end of the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, as usual, all of our contributors from KGOV and Denver Bible Church, our brothers and fellow workers out at Personhood USA, and all of the fine folks out at Theology Online, and of course, as usual, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, and who made a wonderful contribution to the McBurney Family Homeschool Library this week. Thank you, brother Daryl. That's it, folks. We'll be back with you next week. Please, soldier on. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.